Welcome to Everyday Driver, where cars are more than just transportation. They're freedom, a common ground, a way to grow, and can even make life better. We're here to help everyone find a car they love and discover all the ways cars connect us. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is The Car Debate.
Hey guys, welcome back. Happy Tuesday. It dawns on me, we should probably let you know that we, like you, are anticipating a break at the end of the year. We're going to come back the first week of January. You're not losing us yet, but I wanted you to know right. that we have a few more podcasts coming up. We're going to do one today, Tuesday. We're going to do one this coming Friday, the following Tuesday, the 21st, and then we're taking a little more than a week break. You'll actually be three podcasts back. You won't hear from us because we're also going to have a Merry Christmas. We hope you do as well. But right now, hey, we actually have a podcast. We should actually do one. We've got two really cool car debates. We have discussion about all kinds of things, lots of your questions. But should we start, should we discuss anything about the F1 season
that just finished? Okay, maybe we should. We've all been discussing it amongst ourselves.
We have. That's kind
of fine. And so, spoiler alert, if you have not seen the last Formula One race of the 2021 season, spoiler alert, we're going to touch on it just a little bit right now. Hopefully you have seen it. And everybody's got opinions one way or the other.
Sure, yeah,
And I was fascinated to watch this, and I tried to remain as detached as possible for what the outcome was going to be.
okay.
Because I've liked Mercedes, I've liked Lewis, I've followed his career for a long time, but I cannot take anything away from Max's driving.
True.
The guy is spectacular.
Well, and if you aren't up to speed, and I will say this is the guy that doesn't watch as much as many of the others that work with us and around us and many of you that follow us, and there was a huge sub-discussion on our Discord page.
Yes.
A bunch of our patrons that are on Discord had this huge, almost like fighting words on the Discord page. Plus, Ross wrote a really cool article that's on our website under the Writings tab about the F1 season and the discussion on Discord and all of that kind of stuff. If you didn't know, going into the last race, Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton were tied.
All tied
for
up.
Points. Yep. At half points. I forgot half points were given, but at half points.
Yeah.
So that was the points. Ridiculousness. So whoever won the last race, let's be honest. This is good screenwriting. You wanted to come down to the last few scenes, right?
You do.
And the people making the Netflix documentary couldn't be happier that it came down to that.
Right.
But it meant either Max would get his first or Lewis would get his record-breaking eighth.
Indeed.
There's a lot of discussion about how, and I'm not going to go into the nuances of exactly what happened in the race. That will come. Netflix, I'm sure, shot it. Many of you will watch it on YouTube. But there were decisions made under the yellow flag.
There were.
That resulted in Max winning.
Indeed. I thought the same thing. And ultimately, I'm happy with how it turned out.
I am too.
I'm happy. I'm good with it.
I am too.
I think it's healthy for the sport,
mm-hmm.
and I think it keeps Lewis hungry, whether or not you love or hate him.
Mm-hmm.
I think it keeps him hungry for more,
yes.
and he's got winning in his blood. But ultimately, we're talking about two guys who do have hearts of lions. They're championship-winning kinds of hearts
for sure.
in how they drive. And this is the best thing that could have happened to the sport in a long time. Taking nothing away, whether you like or hate Max, I feel like there were some ungentlemanly times that he had that he displayed, but so has Lewis in the past. And I love that it came down to these two guys, and ultimately, Max has now tasted victory. He's going to want more.
For sure.
But Lewis, I think, kind of did it to himself as well.
Even though
I like him, and I was cheering for Lewis. So
interesting. Okay. I go into, of course, just narrative. I just think about it in story terms, right?
Sure.
And honestly, the better story is you want Max to win. People that are pulling the strings to decide the things that happen under the yellow car, what are we allowing? I think they recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
Because as much as I like Lewis, and I do, and as much as he's clearly an amazing driver and a record-breaking driver,
yes.
If he wins again, there's a little bit of a wah-wah in the mind of the audience. Because the same guy won again with the same team, and it's the... But if somebody else wins, like, oh, wait, what happened now? What's going on? This was new and different. That was exciting. Plus, next year is like a total reset with new cars and new teams, and next year is going to be very different.
A lot of new rules involving money as well.
So you bring back everybody on a much more even, curious playing field because the obvious heir apparent, Lewis Hamilton, didn't just win again for the eighth time, but he still wants his eighth. And Max, who everybody's been going, at some point this guy's going to take it. He did win. So you've set up for a much more interesting next season with it ending this way this season. And I love that from a story perspective, but then there's the flip side. The character side of it in me is fascinated by this reality. I really wanted Max to win because of the difference, because of the change.
The sport?
Yes, you're talking, exactly. Sure, because it wasn't just, well, Lewis won again. Because Lewis clearly is awesome, and Mercedes is dominating, and that's all been
for
cool.
Sure,
and
sure.
Red Bull, by the way, side note, how is it possible that a drink company makes so much money making their little drink that they have all the stuff they do, including
we can't answer that question.
An F1 team.
That's unanswerable.
That is shocking to
anyway,
me.
Anyway, keep going.
Anyway, and the guy that runs the F1 team is married to a former Spice Girl. The layers of this.
The story is great.
Fascinate me. But
Netflix has capitalized on
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. But here's the thing. The only thing I don't like about Max winning is this. Lewis is the last guy left that shows that an everyman can be Formula One champion.
That's very true.
Max is as embedded in rich people with F1 background do this as humanly possible. His dad is an F1 racer. Mm-hmm. He grew up in Monaco. His girlfriend is the daughter of an F1 racer.
Yes.
he just shows you that only the elite people that come from Monaco and F1 backgrounds are going to win F1, Max Verstappen. He's just that poster kid.
So Charles Leclerc is next, then,
I guess so.
Because he's almost in the same category.
I guess so. Almost. So the fact that Lewis is this scrappy guy that comes from nothing is one of the best parts about his story. So story-wise,
for sure.
Max is the guy you kind of don't want to have win.
Max is
the popped-collar Ivy League villain in most stories. And Lewis is the underdog you want to have win. But Lewis has won for seven championships, and you kind of want to see something else. It's a weird... The story guy in me is fascinated by this.
Although there is another little twist there. When Max stood next to Nico, and you see Nico Rosberg in the frame, because he was doing some post-race commentating.
Yeah.
The only two guys that can beat Lewis.
Interesting point.
Standing there.
You're right.
Wow, that's kind of interesting, you know, to think about. But yeah, ultimately, I think it's great for the sport. Mm-hmm. It's great because I think it's now pulling in more car enthusiasts that kind of want to know about Formula One and why are the rules that way and why is it like this? And when you find yourself explaining a rule and then you think through the logic of that and you think, what? Okay, so it's really just
what
for
are we
the
doing?
Pure purpose of entertainment.
Yes.
Like DRS. The only point for DRS to exist is entertainment. Mm-hmm. That's it. And so when you start to explain rules, it feels like, oh, well, it's because of the grander scheme behind the...
Nope.
It's for our amusement, which I realized IndyCar and every other form of racing, Formula One is the only, aside from Le Mans too, but the only form of racing that there's trickle-down technology eventually or some kind of form of that to road cars. But the rest of it is just pure entertainment.
Well, F1 is struggling with the soccer problem, and here's what I mean. American football, not the rest of the world's football, American football is structured the way it is, I hate to say it, for the benefit of commercials.
Yes.
And soccer is not structured for commercials. We're going to go for a while, and we're not going to stop because the game is in session. Don't stop the game. Why would you stop it for a commercial? F1 has been finding their footing. I mean, they have American owners, and they have the Netflix series, which is broadening it out like crazy. Mm-hmm. F1 is finding its footing as an entertainment venue and not a racing venue.
Yeah.
And you're watching the morphing of F1 to be more commercial and entertainment friendly, which is this is why when you watch American football, it's like, oh, look, we're going to commercial again. Oh, look, we're going to commercial again. And soccer is like, well, you know what? We'll get there. We'll get to the commercial when we're good and ready.
But that's what Formula One has been doing. They've just shown the race because you can't have an interruption.
Agreed.
There's, you know, timed, especially in NASCAR and IndyCar, they're sort of like, the breakaway to commercial, but then they're still showing the race. It's like, no,
we got to find our footing there. Yeah,
for sure. The race. But yes, it was a fascinating end to the season. Mm-hmm. And however you feel about it, I think it's been excellent for the sport and excellent to bring new people in. I've been talking to a lot of new people, you know, new to the sport, just kind of going, now what is all this? And wow, it's called the circus. Whereas the filmmaking industry is called the industry.
Yeah.
This is the circus.
Yeah.
And people make how much, and why does this matter? And it is all about advertising, too. It's just, it's so great to see that. And
it's going to be fascinating next year, I think.
I'm thrilled, yeah.
I think it really is. For all of the discussion that will be ongoing about the end of this season, I think there couldn't be a better launch pad for next season.
Mm, that's a great way to put it. Guys, we've got a great debate, starting out with Benjamin I, who is writing to us about buying his first enthusiast car. He has been a car enthusiast for about the past 10 years and never, ever had a car with enthusiast cred. He's 37 years old. He's married. He has a 3-year-old daughter, and they're out in southern New Hampshire. He said it's snowy 4 to 5 months a year, but he grew up in coastal North Carolina. He went through a number of cars. They're cars.
They are cars.
But you're right, as far as enthusiast
cred. They were appliances.
Purple 93 Chevy Beretta that he totaled, a Buick Skylark that ran for a year, and then when he got his first car loan, he had a 96 Nissan 200 SX, okay, which is apparently a dreadfully boring
car. Got it.
Yep. He drove it for 5 long years. But then in 2011, he bought an orange 2006 Hyundai Tiburon SE. This was the range topper with a 6-speed manual. He said it was fun, but still slow. And he liked that car well enough in North Carolina, so it came with him to New England when he started his career there in 2012. Paid it off and then started making better money in 2015. And so under the influence of his then-girlfriend, now-wife, and now Minister of Finance, hopefully.
Yes, for sure.
They bought a 2012 Cadillac CTS Coupe. Performance trim, 3.6-liter V6 rear-wheel drive. He was ready to go back to an automatic transmission because the roads and traffic patterns in Massachusetts are not great for manuals, in his opinion.
You're not the first to say that.
Yeah, we've heard this.
Not at all, yeah.
At the time, he walked to work, so driving rear-wheel drive in the snow, not a huge concern. And that CTS Coupe was the first car he ever loved because it was actually nice.
Sure it was.
Felt fast compared to the Tiburon. Many things do. Yes, electric scooters.
There's a good list there.
Lime or Bird scooters.
Remember the commercial where they pulled the Tiburon behind a boat underwater?
I don't remember that.
Because Tiburon means shark, and they had something that was obviously not the full car, but they pulled the shape underwater behind a boat like it was Jaws. You know what? Points for the
marketing
effort.
People.
Points for the effort.
All right. Well, he says this was his I've made it car, CTS Coupe. So they got married in 2017, set about making a baby, which came in September 2018.
We have a plan. It is baby making time.
Going to whiteboard that one out. It was a chore to put the infant car seat into a coupe, though. You had to drive with the seat all the way forward and lean forward, and that front passenger seat, therefore, was unusable. So anytime they traveled as a family, they had to use his wife's 2013 Nissan Murano.
Okay.
Hoping it was a convertible.
Let's hope not, actually.
I hope it was. Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen the one that comes out here in the winter. And by the way, I never see it in the summer. It only comes out here in the winter.
Yes,
it's the blue one with the tan top. And it comes out in the winter here in Park City.
It's usually parked over on Main Street.
I think somebody that must have a winter house here, that must be their car.
Oh, that's a good
point. Because it only shows up in the winter. I'm like, what are you doing?
Maybe they're not here for the season yet. So
I don't know. Yeah, right. we can dream or we can hope, depending on which way you want to go. Yeah, I
can't wait. Well, a year later, he found out he could get $3,000 or more than he owed on the Cadillac in trade.
Huh.
So we got a great deal on a certified pre-owned 2016 Jaguar XF, 14,000 miles, and it cost him $26,000.
Okay.
Supercharged V8 V6 was thrilling, he says, but over time, he felt no connection with the car. It was just boringly competent, but he says he thinks a lot of his dispassion for the car was a result of the styling, which I don't think was bad, necessarily. I thought it was fairly Jaguar-esque in look.
I agree. You'd think that the XF would be exciting, but it just wasn't connecting for him. The reason it's not connecting, though, is the most fascinating thing, because he suddenly realizes that the XF was not a coupe.
Mm-hmm.
And every car he's loved has been a coupe. And then he even thought about the fact that, wait a minute, his parents both only owned coupes.
Fascinating.
So here he realizes that he just can't connect to this car, and he thinks it has to do with it not being a coupe. So he had it for a year. They decided to buy a house, so he dropped it and then realized he could get a better CTS coupe for less money than the last one, less money than he sold the Jaguar for. So now he gets himself another coupe, and you're thinking, wait a minute, what about the kid? But the kid was now a toddler, which meant they were in a booster seat facing forward, so now they could use the back seats and the passenger seat, and he's got the CTS coupe back. But the current used market, you heard this coming, loves coupes, loves the CTS. And
I'm
he
glad.
Can get more selling it than he has in it. So he can sell it and walk away with money. So he's looking at doing that, which has him shopping. But there's this lingering thing about, I think I have to have a coupe.
So funny what our parents' car choices and our childhood.
Completely.
You know, growing up with car and how our parents approach cars and what their use is. Mm-hmm. And it just affects car enthusiasts so deeply. And it's carried through life. It's amazing.
It is interesting, yeah.
Well, Benjamin's budget here is $30,000 or so. Made a mistake when you wrote or so.
Mm-hmm.
However,
put no qualifiers on your budget figure. Right. We will move it.
I'll move it anyway. You know me.
You're right. That's fair.
But nevertheless, he says that he's become more of an impulse shopper than a research shopper. So he's decided what he really wants in a car. And that is something fast and nimble, four doors, but preferably not a sedan. Four doors, not a sedan.
Mm-hmm.
That gets tough.
It does.
Fast and nimble. He'd like it to have some enthusiast credibility. His commute in their new house is about 30 minutes and mostly back roads, so fuel economy is a bit of a factor. Mm-hmm. But he'd like to have more cargo space. He doesn't need a big SUV or truck. He's toyed with that idea, but that's for another time. And he says there's not a lot of options if you want fast, nimble, four doors and not a sedan, as it turns out.
You're right.
He's leaning towards a 2015 to 2016 Golf R, which is a great choice,
and
especially because of that DCT.
It is. And it's let's break it down here. It's a hatchback.
It is. Yep.
It's not a sedan, which is crazy.
Right. Well, his wife is not keen to have him return to a manual. Well, that DCT is an excellent one, and I think you'd really like it. She doesn't like the hatch body style, though. But he says that's not too much of a concern. And the things that he's considered are an Audi S3. He hates the design inside and out. An Audi S4.
You know why that's on the list. Because,
which he doesn't like.
Yeah, because the Audi S4 is a sedan. This is the thing. The first two on the list here, I don't get. Because the S3, you just said you hate it inside and out. So I'm not sure why that's a consideration. The S4 is something that is a sedan and you don't like the look of it. Benjamin, why are they on the list at all?
Guess we're leaving Audis
off
the list.
Those are off, yeah.
He does mention the Kia Stinger, but he says the fun ones are way out of budget. Well, maybe not. With 30 grand, maybe not. You're going to have to shop smart.
I agree. We'll come back to that.
There's a possibility on that. Golf GTI, but he says it feels like he might as well spend the extra dollars and get the R. I'll have you know the brand new GTI is $39,385, so a used R is looking pretty tasty, isn't it?
Yeah, you're a fair point.
He has an Audi back on the list here, an A6 with the V6. I thought Audis were out. I thought
Benjamin,
we ruled that out earlier
sedan.
In the list.
You said no sedan.
And it's a sedan. You're
right. I'm confused. Anyway.
Focus RS is on the list, but it's out of his price range. He said it's maybe a little bit too rough ride for the family. Yeah, I think so. And then Civic Type R, but he says out of his price range and the looks aren't for him. So what is he overlooking? New cars are out of the question due to stock issues, having them in stock, and markups around where he lives.
Okay, all right.
He also says he heard some suggestions on a prior podcast where someone fell in love with a Golf R, and we suggested a Mazda 3 Turbo or Velocirin or a Stinger. And within 100 miles of him, there are three Mazdas, Mazda 3 Turbos, and exactly one Veloster N at the time of writing. He says they're all marked up about $3,000 over MSRP and generally don't last more than a day on the lots. Holy
and
moly.
What's crazy is right now, at the end of 2021, a $3,000 markup over MSRP is actually a decent deal.
It's kind of low.
That's like a, you might want to go buy that. Yeah.
He says the Kia dealer has a blanket $6,000 markup on any new Stingers. That's insane.
It is insane, yeah.
Well, there are some things that you might not be aware of, Benjamin, and I've got some great suggestions for you.
I have a few.
I love the Golf R idea. You've heard me say that. Mm-hmm. Definitely something to explore. I thought of the Mazda CX-30, the turbo version.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, the dealers are not publishing prices because they want to harvest your information and say, contact us. They don't want to publish that.
Yeah, they do.
Guessing they might be a little bit, you know, a little bit too much. And, you know, if there's a scarcity of Mazda 3 turbos, probably going to be about the same. I did find two at Seacoast Mazda, I think. Nevertheless, that's at the time of writing. However, 2015 Mercedes-AMG GLA 45s are all under $30,000.
That's a cool choice.
They have DCTs.
I hadn't gone there. That's a good choice.
And the lowest mileage one that I found was 62,000 miles. So it's above your mileage cap of 50,000 miles. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, every single one, and I found more than 10, they're all under 30K. And they're great to drive. Mm. And what I sort of extrapolated out of your email was the fact that you wanted a car that continues to say, I've made it. Something that feels luxurious and well-built and expensive, even though you might not have paid a lot of money for it. Mm-hmm. Rather than, and Mazdas are certainly that way, but I can see the perception around that too. I get that. Now, I had an initial wild card for you with a 2017 BMW X1 xDrive 28i. Okay. 44,000 miles for $30,000 in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I also found a 2014 X1 with 20,000 miles for $22,000. Because I was thinking, what hatchbacks does BMW build? Well, they build Mini Coopers. Yes, they Clubmans.
Do. Yes, they do.
And Countrymans.
Mm-hmm.
However, the weird wild card I have for you, Benjamin, is a BMW X2.
I wondered if you'd go there. They're actually kind of cool.
They're kind of cool.
That is BMW's equivalent to the GLA, where it really is a yes. hatchback being sold as an SUV.
Exactly right. Yeah. It's the closest thing to a BMW hot hatch that mm-hmm. is four doors. Mm-hmm. I found a lot of them. Every single one was under $30,000. It is the same underpinnings. The chassis as the Countryman, the Clubman, the 2 Series Grand Touring, and the BMW 1 Series. Mm. It's the sports activity coupe. Pick your mileage. Most of them are pretty low mileage, in the 20 to 40,000 miles, all under 30K. X2, my friend.
I like that. I hadn't gone there, but you know what? The X2 is overlooked, and I do think it's exactly that GLA. Everything we like about the GLA.
It is. Yeah.
This is an SUV. No, it's not. It's a hatchback.
But you can get kind of a newer one. The ones that I saw for under 30K were in the 2018 year range.
Sure, yeah.
So it's newer than those GLAs. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, oh, yeah, I was yeah. looking at 2015, 2016, but they're newer, less miles than all the GLAs.
I like this. This is good.
And they're all under 30K. They might be 29, but mm-hmm. still, that's under your price cap. And they've got that chassis, that mini chassis. That's the shared chassis.
That's good stuff.
Shared platform.
That's good stuff. Benjamin, I went different places than Paul. I didn't even think of any of the ones you brought up, which I love that. I love it when that happens. These you may not like necessarily, but I'm going to push you on one thing, and that is a 50,000 mile limit on the mileage. I'm going to push you there.
Fair enough.
What car are we talking about, and how was it actually maintained? If you find one that was well maintained...
Yes.
Get something 80,000 miles, because I don't get the sense that you're going to put an unbelievable amount of miles on your cars. That's not your story here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you want something that you can enjoy. And again, it's that shopping thinking where I'm going to have this for a long time. Must you? Because because here's the thing. Everything you've had of late, you've kind of unloaded it in a couple of years.
That's true.
And so I feel like you're shopping for 50,000 miles as the total mileage from this demeanor of it needs to be around a while. And I'm kind of going, why? Can you get something at 80 and keep it to 100 and move on to something else?
I mean, it could be because of various maintenance items.
Possibly.
It depends on the car.
Absolutely.
And you don't want to take on a cost of,
yes.
you know, all right, it's going to suddenly need blank at 60,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get that.
I understand the reasons to be concerned, but I also just want to challenge you to think, you know, if you bought something at closer to 80 and it had it till 100, you're still going to have a car that's probably just going to run by yeah. and large. But yeah. maintenance is key. What maintenance history are you buying? Four doors, no coupes is very interesting. I like the Golf R. Your A4 is out. The A6 is out.
Audi's
you know
out.
What? Hang on. The Audi A7.
Okay.
Where is that in your consideration?
It's not really a sedan. All right.
So technically, right. that is in the same thinking as the Kia Stinger.
Do you like the styling, Benjamin? Do you like the styling?
That's a question mark. But here's the thing. It's in the same thinking as the Kia Stinger.
It is.
A four-door, good-sized car that technically isn't a sedan. It has a hatch opening. So what about a used A7? They've been out a long time, and there's enough of them out there that I believe you could find one in your budget.
It's true.
So chase A7s. I think that's worthwhile. Stingers, I found some. Now, I will acknowledge, Benjamin, that most of the ones you find for your budget are the 2-liter.
Fair, yeah.
But some of those V6 are out there. I found a few. You got to shop outside your area.
Yeah, I think
shop
if you
nationwide,
shop hard.
Do autotempest.com/everyday, search nationwide,
yeah.
try to find one. I found quite a few.
Did you?
And I used a budget cap of like 32 grand.
And it was all, they're probably coming in 30, high 30s.
You know, and if you open it up to 40, then you got lots of options. But I used a budget cap of 32 grand, and I found a few of that V6. So they
Glad
are out there. And the fact that you're shopping used... You're avoiding the brand new car tax at the moment. So I think that's an option. I wanted to say Volvo V60, but all the ones that are in your budget are the prior one.
The prior body style.
The interior
style.
Is not as good. It's a huge interior jump that happened when they made the new version. So that's actually out. But you know what else is in this category? Is the BMW 430 Grand Coupe. We drove it against the Stinger.
Okay, yeah.
You know what? There's a lot of those out there for your budget.
Now, 430 this is, had good power.
This is the four-cylinder, but it's got mid-300s in power, and it feels good.
I mean, actually, keep in mind, BMW sandbags, too.
Yeah, they do. Well, that was the thing. It was 200s in power, but we kept driving it against the mid-300 Stinger and going, that BMW is not nearly as far down as it suggests.
It's like just over 250 or something, and you think, that seems anemic, and then you drive it, and you're not left wanting.
So watch our Kia Stinger BMW 430i Grand Coupe TV piece from a few seasons back. That's on YouTube and Amazon and everywhere else. So watch that piece, consider that one, and then I have a wild card.
Okay.
where I just thought, not a sedan, has definite street cred, okay. has lots of family space,
okay.
has great dynamics, mm. is possible for your budget if you are a little bit open to mileage. Okay. Lots of options out there of the Porsche Panamera.
I went there. Good for you.
Now, okay. Benjamin, look, you're not going to buy the big monster turbo. Plus, don't buy the big monster turbo. The early turbos were, they could have some problems. Let's be kind.
They might have problems. But that V6 still has good power.
But then you can get the 4 and 4S even for your budget. So now you've got all-wheel drive.
Are we talking early 2010s?
I'm talking pre-2015 was what I was finding.
Okay.
And they varied. They varied in mileage, location, all that kind of stuff. But I was finding lots of them. Porsche Panameras. Now, mileage is key here.
Yeah.
And mileage maintenance is even more important because you may have to go beyond your mileage cap of 50,000 miles, but if you find somebody, and a lot of Porsche owners are this way, who was meticulous with mileage, I would say buy that car. You find 80,000 miles, but all the maintenance has been done, you find a Panamera, I would just say yes and go get it.
That's an interesting choice. I can't remember what year that they switched to the 3.3 liter V6 and upgraded the displacement a little bit.
I don't remember either.
Because you've got the 3 liter V6 mm-hmm. in your car. It yes, just I do. Runs.
Yes, it does.
And it's the same motor, I believe, from mm-hmm. that era.
It is so similar.
That's great news.
So I think you should consider the Panamera if you like it at all. Now, I realize that is a love it or hate it styling moment early on in the life of the Panamera, but it does everything you're asking
for. But
the
price makes it look better.
Yes, it does.
The beer goggling of the Panamera.
You better believe it. Everything you're asking for, if you're just willing to go with a little bit higher mileage. Why it's a wild card, because I know it's a bit of a stretch. Come on, man.
You've heard us talk about drive homework. Because it's vital to drive a lot of things when trying to find your next car. Knowing your options is important. This applies to online shopping too. You don't want to search just one website unless that site is searching all of the other ones for you.
That's why we love AutoTempest. I know you've heard us talk about it before, and we hope you've already seen how far you can shop with just one search. AutoTempest pulls from all the top used car sites at once, so you know you won't miss a deal on that perfect car.
AutoTempest.com. All the cars. One search. Jacques writes to us from North Carolina about towing his race car.
Sure. Let's do that. Let's just tow a race car.
Interesting.
That actually goes cool places. I agree.
He's been listening to us for a couple of years and in need of our assistance. The car bug has bit him hard growing up with both of his parents racing in SCCA road course mm-hmm. events. There it is again about your parents' take on cars and how they look at cars and what cars mean to them.
My poor son is ruined. Have you seen the Lotus piece? Yeah, he's ruined.
Anyway. Well, he's 23 now. He's had a few cars over the years. He's had an 02 Honda Odyssey in gold.
You are just now driving, here's a box. Odyssey. That's what that was.
Probably grew up in. Mm-hmm. His first real car was an 03 Volkswagen Jetta GLI, 6-speed manual in black. Okay. And a 92 Miata in black. He went through nut and bolt coilovers, bushing, sway bars, roll bars, harnesses, 6-speed swap, LSD swap, wheels and tires, so much more.
He just kind of dismantled it, put it back together. Miata.
Gosh. Well, he's currently got 3 cars. Well done.
3 cars at 23?
I
was lucky to have actually been in 3 cars, period, that I could call my own by 23, let alone at the same time. Bravo, man.
No. 2000 BMW. It's an E39 540 wagon in blue.
All right, like it.
By the way, Jacques sent us photos, and the photos are hilarious because he is towing his race car with this BMW. Mm. He's driving it every day, 50 miles round trip to work and back. He's done all the maintenance. He bought it 2.5 years ago. He's done the timing chain, full coolant system refresh, suspension. And this is with a custom hitch that he made and got certified. He tows the race car to and from autocross events. Now, this race car is another black 93 Miata. It's a full CSP class spec for SCCA autocross because mom and dad did.
So we're back. Yay!
He was able to place second at Nationals his first time there. And
good
like
job.
I said, he sent photos. And then finally, a white 1983 Volkswagen Rabbit pickup.
Pickup is the key word. Remember the Rabbit pickup?
So funky and cool.
They're like the Volkswagen Brat.
That's great.
They're kind of like the Volkswagen Brat. That's what they are. Yeah.
It does have a VR6 swap out of a 99 GTI. He says this car is for those who don't know, it's built off the same front chassis as the Rabbit, so it's front-wheel drive, absolute blast to drive, 200 horsepower, and it weighs 2,000 pounds.
That's Lotus Elise power-to-weight ratio there, folks. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're just so funky looking. They're just, they're great. When you see one, you go, oh, yeah.
Those existed.
I guess I'll keep driving.
Yeah.
For somebody else to own. But his question is, Jacques says he would like an enclosed trailer for the race car, but the BMW can only tow 5,000 pounds. I didn't know it could tow that much.
I'm surprised as well. That seems like a high number for that.
It really does.
All right.
So he'd be looking to replace it, but he seems to be let down with all the trucks nowadays, and he's driven all the Fords and Dodges and Chevys and Toyotas that can tow 10,000 pounds, but he's not getting the fizz like any of his other cars. Well, that's just by their very nature. They're just not going to give that same kind of race car. You're coming out of an SCCA spec autocross Miata.
True, but he's also driving a BMW wagon.
And yeah,
that's the thing. His tow vehicle is actually really cool to drive. That's the problem.
It's true. He says the Odyssey drives better than most trucks. You're not wrong.
Okay.
So should he suck it up because the truck has purpose and get what he can with selling the BMW around 15 grand?
Okay.
Who wants Jacques' blue 540 E39 wagon? It's so cool.
I kind of do, and I have absolutely zero use for it.
Oh, it's
I kind of want it. It sounds amazing.
Does he sell the Volkswagen Rabbit pickup to throw another $7,000 at it and get a better truck so you'd have just over $20,000 to spend on some kind of pickup, which I'm sure you could find easily a pickup that will tow your house.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But then you'll be driving a pickup that can tow your house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be happy, clearly. It almost seems like you're in the perfect situation right now. I didn't know that wagon could tow 5,000 pounds.
I didn't either.
Mike, other question for you is your race trailer in your photos looks very light, but your car is very light.
Mm-hmm.
Combined, that can't exceed 5,000 pounds. And even if you get a lightweight enclosed trailer, I don't think you're going to exceed 5,000 pounds.
I was wondering that as well.
So why do you need a truck that can tow 10,000?
I was wondering that as well. I mean, maybe everything he's thinking of taking in an enclosed gets him like very close to five, and that's his problem, because that's obviously the tow thing. You want to have extra. You don't want to tow 5,000 pounds with your 5,000 pound rated thing.
Right.
Maybe
right.
That's the issue. But I also, I kind of ask myself, what all else is going in this trailer? Because why do you need an enclosed trailer?
I mean, and sometimes I get the sense, you're carrying fuel.
This is the thing I'm wondering. I'm wondering about what else is going in that trailer, because it's more than just the car.
Started thinking, Jacques. Ford Ranger can tow 7,500 if you've got that optional towing package.
Mm-hmm.
But that means you sell the BMW. That BMW is special. Plus, you've put money and time and work
for sure.
into it. A Honda Ridgeline, a Santa Cruz, 5,000 pounds, properly equipped.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at the Ford Maverick.
Okay.
Because the whole point of a Ford Maverick is a $20,000 pickup truck.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
They quickly go over that when you load them up. But if you try hard to keep them base, they're maybe touching 25.
Okay.
Now you have to get the optional 4K towing package, but it only bumps you up to 4,000 pounds.
Isn't that interesting?
That's kind of a bummer. I was a bit disappointed to find that out.
Yeah.
Because I understand your desire for pickup truck, because that's more tires in the bed of the thing and, you know, chairs, cooler, everything else that goes along with a race weekend that might not fit in the trailer. The trailer is probably cars, tools, you know, minimal stuff in a small-ish trailer for a Miata. You're trying to keep the weight down, probably trying to keep the cost down on the trailer too. So I get it. And like I said, if you're carrying a fuel drum or, you know, fuel bottles and tools, and that stuff adds up. You can't ignore that on a trailering package that is as light as you're talking about. But I guess pickup truck. And if you do, what one strikes you the best as far as styling? What one strikes you the best as far as, all right, if I want to upgrade in the future, I can. I've got 10,000 pounds and I can tow whatever. You said you've driven them all and it comes down to personal preference at this point. And for 20 grand, you can. But I really, really hate for you to let the BMW go and the Volkswagen Rabbit to go.
That is a little heartbreaking.
Those are cool, unique, special car enthusiast cars.
They are. Jacques, I really do want you to do the math closely here and ask yourself, how big a trailer, what's in the trailer, how much does your Miata race car probably weighs less than my Lotus does.
Yeah.
It's probably a sub 2,000 pound car.
Yeah.
Who knows? But anyway, I mean, I definitely do the math and see if that BMW can stay. I do love your current garage. However, a couple things struck me here. That BMW is not just your tow vehicle. It's also your daily.
It is the commute car to work.
The Rabbit pickup, you said, it's a couple weekends from being a daily, but it sounds like, I mean, that's just the laugh vehicle. It's just, yeah. I can't believe I have one of these.
Yeah.
I don't get from you a sense that even though it's a blast drive, and the you mentioned you'd be willing to sell it. That's been like the fun science project, is the sense that I get from you. So it could go, and it's not really a daily car. It's a laugh riot, but it's not really a daily car. Obviously, you can't daily the Miata.
Right.
So
right.
If you sell both of those, which is where I'm going, I'm just going to follow that rabbit trail for a second. If you sell both of those,
whatever
you end up with, yes, is your daily. So now you have a pickup
that's the daily
that you have to daily,
dang
and you
it.
Don't want to be in a pickup. And I suddenly realized I had a sniper shot. I haven't gone here in a long time. I have a sniper shot.
Okay, tell me.
I have something that can be your daily that is actually decent to drive, that actually is classy like the BMW.
Okay.
And it can tow up to 7,000 pounds.
Mall ears.
Porsche Cayenne.
Cayenne.
The Cayennes tow 7,000. Their rating sometimes is as high as 7,700 or 8,000 pounds, depending upon the way you get it spec'd. Go take your 20-plus grand.
There it
buy
is.
Yourself a used Porsche Cayenne. You are now a 23-year-old who dailies a used Cayenne that people are going to think cost 60 to 100 grand, and it cost you 20, 25. And then you can pull your race trailer with your race-prepped Miata behind your Cayenne to the track and show up. I'm stopping. I haven't done
That's
a sniper shot in a long
pretty
time.
Pretty dang good, I have
but
to admit.
7,000-pound towing capacity in your Porsche Cayenne, and when you have to daily it, you'll still be happy.
That's interesting. I didn't realize they towed that much.
Believe it or not.
That's pretty good.
Believe it or not, yeah.
That's useful because it's interesting how many of these smaller trucks end at five.
Yes.
Almost as if it's a gentleman's agreement.
Yeah, it'll be five. Five's fine. Five's good enough.
Why do you need to stop there? Can the chassis take a little bit more? That's your selling point right there. Can you go 6,500? Can you go more?
Yeah.
On any of these brand new trucklets, whatever they are. The Ranger with 7,500 is like, okay, great. Full-size pickup trucks from the last era used to tow.
Yeah.
But a Cayenne? Porsche for the win.
Isn't that crazy?
That's awesome.
If you park outside during cold months, overnight, at home, or at work, you need a car cover from Covercraft.
We specifically recommend the Custom Weather Shield HP Car Cover. It's designed for dramatic water dispersion while still being breathable and super lightweight. It's also got superior paint finish protection too. On the underside, it's less abrasive than flannel.
Our cars are an investment. From our personal fun cars and SUVs to our cheap sports cars, Covercraft is focused on protecting all of them. And whatever car, SUV, or truck you love, they want to protect that too.
Whatever sunscreen, dash cover, or car cover you choose, remember to use the code EVERYDAY21 at checkout to receive a 10% discount and free shipping from Covercraft.com specifically for our audience. Follow the link from our sponsors page or go directly to Covercraft.com for high-quality products that keep your vehicles protected and looking their best. Covercraft, protecting the things that move you.
Great questions as always, guys. Thank you as always for chiming in and just letting us know what's on your mind. Again, we take questions on all of our social media outlets, and typically we ask for them on Mondays or Thursdays for the Tuesdays and Friday podcast. I want to remind you, if you are a person wanting to send in a car debate, please don't send them there. Also, please don't send them in the direct messages of Instagram or that kind of thing. It's harder for us to get them into the pipeline of consideration to actually be on the show. So if you have a car debate, please send them to everydaydriver.tv@gmail.com or go to our website, everydaydriver.com, hit the contact button, send them there. Both of those wind up in the same email funnel, which helps us more than you know. So please send the actual car debates that way. Tons of great questions. I'm going to start here. Jared Rose one said he's having trouble finding the American original Blu-ray. I don't know why, man. I looked just before we started recording. They're available. We have them. You should be able to go to Amazon right now and order them. It shouldn't say out of stock. I'm not sure the last time
you
checked.
That's the click-through the website, yes. From everydaydriver.com,
you can go,
click to the store,
directly.
Then Amazon.
You can go right through the films tab, and you can get there. You can wind up on Amazon. You should be able to find it, no problem.
Let's talk architecture. Question from M. Gibalisco, who says, Paul, why are garages so small on older homes when the cars were so big? Their home is from 1957. Well, back in the 40s, early 40s, is when garages transformed from carriage houses to being attached to homes, and people wanted homes. The houses that were built that didn't have garages or attached garages were tough sells because of the post-war thing. Everybody wanted a car, but it wasn't until the 1960s when the average American family could afford more than one car. So your home is, I think, right in the cusp of 1957 and earlier homes built with smaller cars in mind, those early Chevys and Fords from the 1940s that weren't the big Cadillacs and Packards and V16 Cadillacs, straight eight Duesenbergs, and, you know, the big stuff that was the rich people who had the big carriage houses on their estates.
Interesting. Okay.
But that, I think that was the thinking. I think cars outgrew their homes and outgrew architecture thinking far more quickly than what architects could keep up with and what demand could. Because in the late 50s, Cadillacs were huge already.
Yeah.
They peaked in 1962.
Yeah.
So by 1957, those are big, big cars. But home building at that point had not caught up, I don't think, because, as you know, once a home is built, it is what it is until you modify it, until you, you know, remake the garage or do new construction on it. And so I don't think architects realized how quickly this demand in cars, this big, beautiful, sweeping lines in the tail fin era was growing. I mean, 59 Cadillacs, that was peak tail fin. And by 62, the cars were just enormous.
You also bring up that interesting question, and I don't know what the stats are. Somebody will know. And that is, how often did people have more than one car at that era?
I mean, was just beginning in the mid-60s, I think.
Yeah, I don't think in the 50s it was really common for families to have two cars. So now you just got to fit one car. We had a garage in Houston, a house built in the 80s, if I remember, and it was a two-car garage, but no, it wasn't.
I mean,
the only way to get two cars in there was to put them so unbelievably close to each other, and you had to get everybody else out of the car, and the driver had to slither out. I mean, I remember that was a house from the 80s. So, I mean, there's all kinds of considerations for how big's the lot. And you've said it before that architects hate cars. I mean, it's just that there's a lot of situation that happens where it's just we're going to make it to spec, but we're not giving it, not designed to be luxurious, because that's not the stuff we want you excited. What you excited about? The bedrooms, the bathrooms, the house, the kitchen. Yes, we need to do a garage.
If realtors would publish photos of the garage, I'd be so happy. I just like to look at houses, too. I look at cars, but I look at houses, too. And I never see any photos of listings with the garage. Make the garage amazing. What if it's three car? Show me what's in there. Do you have a charger on the wall in there? Oh, that could be a selling point.
There you go.
Show me the garage. Is it painted floor? Is there nice cabinetry? The garage is such a selling point, and I think will continue to be, because people want to own stuff. We think of this future as the electric pod is going to show up at your house and take you wherever you want. And so therefore architecture for new homes needs to keep up by not building garages anymore. Where are you going to keep all your stuff, all your crap,
you
the
junk.
Overflow?
Where does it go?
Or if you have a garage, either start a, you know, the world's next big tech company, or start the, you know, a famous rock band. You've got a garage. That's what they're for, right? So I think garages and garage architecture as attached to homes will still be very prevalent for years to come. I wish that garages were paid more attention to by home builders. Make them more spacious. Cars still are getting bigger with SUVs. They're still getting bigger. Let's give the space. Let's put the space in the garage. It's the cleanest room in my house.
Travis Bacon asked a question that I realized I didn't talk about in our recent Civic Si test drive or in our actual TV episode, because it wasn't as much of an issue, but he had a question, and that is rev hang on the new Civic Si. The last Civic, the Si, most of the Civics of the last gen, the 10th gen, the rev hang was bad. It was genuinely very bad. And I realized something on the new one. Does it exist? Yes, it's still there. Is it annoying? No, it is not. The most times that I actually discovered it was a full throttle, buried to the floor red line shift was about the only time it reared its head. If you were driving in a normal, and I mean fast, but a normal fashion, it rarely was annoying, because it would at least drop fast enough that you were engaging in a normal way with the gearbox. I mean, when we drove a recent GLI and it was rev hang all the time, no matter what you did. And the last Civic was pretty much that way. It was rev hang all the time. Mm-hmm. This one seemed to drop better. There's still some, if you really are kind of looking for it, it's there, but I do think they've improved it.
Yeah, agreed. Well, Kazi Chav is asking, what's the reason behind Acura not offering all their normal TLX colors, like the crazy purple, on the Type S? Shouldn't they want to make their performance sedans stand out like so many other brands do? I will call and ask. I cannot tell you. I don't know the decision behind that.
It's very funny.
But I'll call my friend Damon at Acura and ask him why.
That's a good, I like that. Seth Kleinman is saying, assuming you're not a BMW driver and actually use your turn signals. Ooh, wow. Okay. So there's a shot right off the bat. Now, the question is, if you use turn signals, and you should, because people are not mind readers. This is the best benefit of the turn signals. People behind you cannot read your mind, just so you know. Do we signal while changing lanes or before changing lanes? Generally, but unless traffic is tight, I am kind of signaling at the same time. I will hit the stalk and then begin the move. And then it's just a matter of how fast do the blinkers start happening. As traffic gets tighter, I start signaling sooner and sooner and sooner. Because if I'm in, you know, packed traffic, I need you to know that I'm thinking about a move before I even make a move. If we're all moving along with a lot of space, I'm going to let you know as I'm kind of in the process.
Break it off and throw it at people. Kander Swims says, what is the best powertrain combo out right now? What standouts have been in test cars this year? Genesis G70 is certainly up there. That was...
Yeah, it's really good.
Really, really good.
It's really good.
The Type S, the Acura TLX Type S, was really good. We had other issues about the car, but the powertrain?
That's fair. That's fair, yeah.
Pretty good. All the Mercedes AMG cars and SUVs and all the AMG love. Yes, 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 yes. But the standout was the Honda Civic Si.
Really?
That combo. I thought that actually ties into another question further on down the list here, because I thought that it was from Ghosty Miata. What press car shocked us the most this year? You either thought it'd be good or you thought it was going to be horrible. I thought it would be average. I thought it would be yet another iteration. I didn't think that the refinement, the level of refinement and, you know, reducing horsepower could actually be more tempting.
Interesting.
And the Civic Si did it. If you have not seen our Civic Si review, it is on the Test Drive channel. Easiest way to get there is to go to everydaydriver.com. Mm-hmm. Second tab over is YouTube, and then you can choose either of our channels.
Yep.
So you go to Test Drive right there, and as of this recording, it's our latest Test Drive. Mm-hmm. And you can see what we thought of it. I didn't come in thinking that I'd really like it. I've loved Hondas. I had two Accords early
on.
Sure,
yeah.
They were great. Hondas are just great. But, you know, as you discover performance cars and other kinds of platforms, yeah, they got left behind in my mind. And then here's this Si again. Yes, the price went up. Yes, there's less standard features, but wow, what a car.
Cool to drive. That Test Drive tells the story for sure. We will do a big kind of end of the year, next year car wrap up thing. We'll probably do that the first week of January to start your 2022 off right. We'll have a big discussion of cars of the year and cars coming up. That's going to be really cool. Travels with George J says, this is going to get personal. What's the biggest car purchase negotiation blunder we've ever made? Have you ever regretted a car purchase by the time you got your new car home? I've mentioned this before, with a few exceptions, and I'm getting better about it. With a few exceptions, I have terrible buyer's remorse. 48 hours or so, like a day to the 48-hour mark of after I have a car, I am convinced I got completely screwed.
What aspect of it? Just paying the money or getting a deal?
I am besieged by the feeling that it's all going to go wrong. Paid too much. There's a gotcha coming. Car's going to be a disaster. All of the above plagues me. I'm getting better about it because you and I do things like buy $5,000 Volkswagen Phaetons. And that pretty well just resets my brain. Because that got pulled off the truck and I was like, everything's going to go wrong and I'm fine with it. You know, it's a very different thing.
Some did. Well, I was thinking about the Maserati. Went to the Vegas strip mall.
Yes.
At a lawyer's office by day to buy a used car that the inventory was kept in the parking lot. I think it was kept somewhere else, and then at night he pulled it out.
I think so too. It was very questionable.
Him, yeah. By the airport and bought the car with a debit card and then drove it home. And the next morning I was driving it home thinking, this car needs to get me home. Hope it gets me home. I hope to not be stranded.
Yeah.
It's running currently.
Let's go.
It's still running. Whew.
I will tell you the experience that I had that I think scarred me a little bit as an adult.
Okay.
And set this up.
Okay.
Because my wife, before we got married, her parents got her, like, when she graduated college, they got her a Wrangler Sport. So it's the base Wrangler.
I remember
Wrangler,
that. That was
she had a Wrangler
black
Sport,
one, right?
Black one. It was brand new. She loved it. It was manual transmission. It was everything. This is one of the reasons to this day she still loves the Wrangler so much.
Oh.
We got married a few years later. And then we'd had that car a couple of years into our marriage, and we'd done some really cool road trips and fun with it. But then that car still had some decent value, and we needed a bigger car, a more usable car.
Okay.
And so we traded that in to get the GMC Yukon she ultimately loved, but she cried. She wept when we sold that Jeep.
Really?
And here I am, the young husband. I was like late 20s, okay? And I'm having to be the man and negotiate, right? Which I'm not prepared to do at all. We were on a little used car lot run by this couple. They were probably twice our age, and they knew all of the tricks.
Ugh.
They knew all the tricks.
That stinks.
And I was aware of some of them, but I was oblivious to many others. And one of the ones I fell for was, I knew what I thought the Jeep should be worth as a trade-in.
Okay.
And he went out and checked it over and came in and said, no, it's worth this, and here's why. And something in the back of my mind was like, I don't think you've got the stats on the Jeep right, but you do this, and I don't, so maybe you know. He was wrong, I was right, and I got screwed on the trade-in.
I've never heard this story, man.
Yeah, I got screwed on the trade-in. And so when we left
kidding.
With a car, look, here's the thing you have to know about this Yukon. We bought it at about 60,000 miles. We had it for more than a decade. We put 200,000 miles on it in our ownership. This is the car that you were in a million times, Paul, as we drove back and forth to Mammoth. It
totally.
Ran like crazy.
Totally.
It was a fantastic truck for us. So the story ends well. But I knew after I got home, I'd been screwed. I paid too much for the Yukon, and I didn't get enough out of the Wrangler, and I didn't see it at the time. And the little times that I thought, I don't think that's right, I didn't stand my ground. So I have become a very different car buyer since, but that scarred me, and I felt like I'd let my wife down because she was weeping that the Jeep was being sold, even though she liked what we were getting, and then I did it wrong. So, George,
I didn't know that.
The story, and it hurts to this day.
Wow. Did he try to undercut you by quoting the Jeep specs were different than what you knew they were to be, and you just kind of went, okay, I'm trying to do this deal. And
I guess you know.
But you knew the specs. You knew here's what it has, here's what it doesn't.
I should have stood my ground and been like, what the heck are you talking about?
Ugh, that stinks. I think for me it was that Cayman, the first Cayman that I bought. And I bought it sight unseen. Mm-hmm. The pictures were great. It was located just outside Tulsa, Oklahoma.
I remember.
And the guy who was selling it, we determined he lived on gravel rock road and didn't really care about it. And then I'm pretty sure when they got their minivan, because they had their fourth kid and needed to get rid of the Cayman.
Yes.
And somebody opened the minivan door right into the fender. So it had a fender ding, and that wasn't really disclosed. Mm-hmm. And then he didn't have the maintenance records, because I think this was just toy. It was just, I don't care. Yeah. It's just an interim thing. If you want it, fine. If you don't, it'll sell. Kind of attitude. So we didn't have all the maintenance records. So when we showed up on our one-way plane ticket, you came with me to drive it back to California. I thought, I didn't know about the door ding. You kind of should have told me about that.
Yeah.
Or it was the fender ding on the fine line, the fender arch line.
I remember.
Which I never actually got fixed. Reasons for that. But then he didn't have all the maintenance records. He was just kind of like, it's been, I got some, I guess. Didn't really care. Didn't really pay much attention to it.
It's been maintained. You're like, no.
What? It's got 25,000 miles on it. I mean, that's kind of new, but it still needs maintenance. And have you done anything to it? Like, he just had this devil may care attitude about it, kind of cavalier about it. And I was like, but this is expensive and it's a Porsche and I might be screwed because I don't know mechanically what it might need. And then we got in it. Throw it home, and I had to make a game time decision.
Yeah.
Here's the cashier's check I brought with me. I guess we're doing this, and hit the road.
Here
and
we go.
Amazingly enough, it turned out to be an excellent car. Once I get a car, I need to immediately do an oil change just to reset the meter.
Mm-hmm.
It's just my thing. I have to just, I don't care if you've already changed the oil. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it again because I have to know. Whether I do it or I have a shop do it,
I have
to know that this resets the maintenance records for me. I need them to look it over. Post-purchase inspection.
Yes, for sure. We do that a lot.
But that was a pucker moment. It wasn't a remorse moment per se. It was just more of a, did I just waste $37,000?
We have clearly had much more questionable car purchases since then. But those are the times for sure.
Oh, man. Hey, there's a watch question.
Uh-oh.
Welcome watch question from KTL23. It's a track daily crush in the form of movements. Quartz, automatic or mechanical? Well, automatic is at the top of my list. Mechanical is number two, so I'm crushing quartz, even though there's many quartz watches that are great, but I prefer the automatic. I mean, what we're talking about is, you know, Rolex or Tudor versus the latest Omega Speedy, which is mechanical, versus anything else that's quartz.
I'm completely lost.
I really appreciate the mechanical nature of things. And whenever I see somebody wearing an Apple Watch, I think that's going to be in your junk drawer in about 6 months, because the new one's coming out and you'll go, it doesn't have the features that I want. And you're going to have to buy it another one again. It's like buying, you know, a bunch of crappy knives, and then instead of the one knife that you have for the kitchen knife, you know what I mean?
This is my knife.
But a watch, that's something you're going to pass down to somebody, or you'll sell it for probably the same amount you bought it for. That's why I appreciate them so much. And for me, it's, I'm watching my life tick away. It's the weirdest thing. I'm like looking at my, it's a sentimental look at my life. Like, what am I doing with my time right now? What could I be better doing with my time?
Okay.
And this thing is recording it for me. It's not just the digital, here's the features. I don't care about that stuff.
Interesting.
I got the phone and the iPad and the computer and all that stuff. But this precious thing that's tells the story of my life with springs and gears in a cool looking thing that I love to always look at. There's no point when I don't enjoy looking at watches.
That's fascinating.
And okay. Here it is. Right. And it's recording the timeline of my life. That's why I like them so much.
Bravo. All right. Well, I'm going to stop here with Bradley Lee, 1983, says, with new sports cars coming out, the revised BRZ or 86, the next-gen Civic Type R, you could throw the MX-5 in there, lots of others. He says he finds himself pausing as he looks for a Cayman.
He feels don't pause! No.
Paul
is
saying,
hit the gas!
Why are you pausing? Let's go get a Cayman.
No pause.
He says, now hang on. He can get a lot of the cars we're discussing for less than a used 718 Cayman. How do you determine if it's worth the price bump? Now, Paul and I have talked about the price of fun many, many times. We want to visit that a little bit. But what you have to do, Bradley, is you actually have to try to drive these within the same day. You need to drive the 86 and drive a Cayman. We want to put the new 86 with a used Cayman and have that discussion. That's one of the many things we want to do. You're right. The Z car is coming. There's lots of other ones that are out there. You have to find a way to drive them in as close proximity as humanly possible. And then which one speaks to you the most? And that is beyond budget. I know that sounds weird. Budget is a factor. But what's the one that you can't get over how cool it was to drive it and to be in it? And that might, here's the thing I want to free you up with. That might be the cheaper car.
Oh, yeah.
It absolutely might be.
Yeah, it can be.
It doesn't mean that the more expensive car is always the one that's better. It does not mean that at all. And we've all been conditioned with the posters on our walls and everybody driving the latest exotic. We've been conditioned that must be the best car ever. And it might not be for you.
Totally.
So you need to drive them, and you're right. It may be a situation where you find yourself in a new 86 or even a Civic Type R because you like it more than a Cayman. That reality exists. There's also nothing to take away how awesome a Cayman really is.
Season 10 begins January 1st, 2022 at 7:30 Eastern on the 1st. As I said, we're looking forward to sharing this entire season with you. It's coming together. I hear updates from Todd, and he comes over and says, I've got a mix of this, and I've got a 50-minute A-roll of this, and it's cool to hear the updates. And thanks to Chance and Edgar for their work on the episodes, too. I'm continuing putting out test drives. We are putting out test drives and podcasts, like Todd said at the beginning, from through the end of the year, and then we're going to be taking a break. But continue sending your Topic Tuesdays, your car buying stories, your discussions, your questions. We love hearing from you guys, and we really appreciate it. And we're already looking forward to 2022. Lots to come. Cheers, guys.